Okay, so we'll continue with this pastime, and we'll go from verses 29 through 40. Then tomorrow night we'll begin chapter 37. I have your open book topics for the next section. So just remind me at the end of the class, I'll find them out. There's also KMBs, key memory verses for the next section. So just remind me at the end of the class and I'll give them all to you. Okay. Text number 29. Gentle Akrura, you always carry out your duties soberly, and therefore I am depending on you. Just as powerful Indra took shelter of Lord Vishnu to achieve his goals. So, who is speaking here?
Tamsa.
So we're seeing in this verse that he is taking shelter of a devotee. Now, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a devotee has 26 qualities. What are the 26 qualities of the devotee?
Honesty
and love. Yeah? This means moderate portions. Are you following that one? Any other?
Love for God.
Yeah, Krishna Gashana, that's the principal quality.
Honest.
Honest, yeah. Satcha, yeah, that's good.
Clean,
yeah, that's good.
Grave.
Grave, Gambira, yeah, good, very good. So one of the qualities of the devotee, 26 qualities, is Daksha. What does Daksha mean?
Expert.
A devotee is expert. So because the devotee is expert, Kamsa is calling upon Akrura to go to Vrindavan and to bring Krishna and Balaram back. Now, you'll see in the history of our Sampradaya, the Acharyas are Nichasiddha devotees. It means they come directly from the spiritual world to spread Krishna consciousness. So one of the nice examples, his disappearance day was on Saturday. His name is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was incredibly powerful in terms of his material position. Within the British Raj, the British were dominating India at that time. And historically speaking, he was the highest placed person in the entire British Raj. Extremely powerful. He was a court magistrate, which means he was like a district governor. And usually the British took those roles, but he was the only person at that point in time in India who took that position who had a body, an Indian-born body. So this shows that devotees are daksha. Daksha means they're expert in all fields of knowledge. Every devotee has different abilities and different qualities, but you see these Nichasiddha devotees, quite often they display extraordinary qualities, just like Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. Rupa Goswami was the treasurer, Sanatana Goswami was the prime minister of a government. So if you're very qualified and exalted personalities. So the devotee is known as being daksha. So Akrura is very expert. Therefore Kamsa says, you go to Vrindavan, you bring Krishna and Balaram back. Because these things are not necessarily easy to do. He knows there may be some difficulties or complications. So he takes shelter of the devotee. He's speaking very sweetly to the devotee. Demons are like that. They'll speak very sweetly when they want something. That's demoniac consciousness. Demoniac consciousness means when you want something, you'll be very nice. Just like sometimes your family members like that. When they want something, they'll speak very sweet. Just like my daughter, because she's a teenager, 12, 13 years old. So, you know, she's delving with the material energy. That's what they do when they get to that age. If you've got any kids or teenagers, then you may relate to what I'm talking about. So she gets in the car the other day, And she starts speaking to me very nicely. I think, oh, that's strange, because, you know. And she goes, can we turn the radio on? She wants to listen to some you know, non-devotional music, because she's at that age, she goes to high school and her friends are doing it. So when they want something, then they'll be very nice to you. That's the nature of demoniac consciousness. Mm-hmm. So things in the material world, because we're, Prabhupada explains, we have the demon and the devotee both inside the same body in Kali Yuga. So sometimes, you know, a nice side comes out, but sometimes a very unpleasant side comes out. So basically, demoniac consciousness means selfish, and devotional consciousness means very selfless. So Kamsa, he's being very polite and very cordial and very following etiquettes, and he's speaking very nicely, but it's completely self-motivated. So he's taking shelter of a guru. So, any points?
Next verse, he is telling, because it's a new rut, new chariot, so he'll be very tempted to drive. But actually, he took it because Krishna was their future.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the nature of the Nandaroyas. Please go to Nanda's village, where the two sons of Anaka Dundubi are living, and without delay, bring them here on this chariot.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti gives the following interesting note. When King Kamsa said, "With this chariot," he pointed with his index finger to a brand new, attractive chariot. Kamsa thought that since Akrura was innocent by nature, when he saw this fine, new vehicle, he would naturally want to drive it and quickly bring the two boys back. But the actual reason Akrura went on a new chariot was that it would have been clearly inappropriate for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to mount a chariot that had already been enjoyed by the wicked Kamsa.
Any points there?
Only the best for Krishna.
More of the devotees to always give the best to Krishna.
Very good.
Akura was waiting for this opportunity, and that is why he was serving Kamsa, that one day he will see Krishna. So this was the perfect opportunity that he was fulfilling to that Kamsa chose Akura and no one else to go. Because he was the devotee, he wanted, he had that desire to see Krishna.
Yeah, nice point. Anything else?
Consciousness of non-devotee and devotee both are different. They think from the other opposite perspective only. Materialistic people, they want something in return all the time. And devotees always want to serve Krishna without anything else in return.
Yeah, so the basic premise is that a devotee always wants to offer Krishna the best of everything. So that should be the consciousness of the devotee. We always give Krishna the best. And actually, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru, says the Vaishnavas should also have the best of everything. Because they're Krishna's devotees. So they should have the best facility in Krishna's service. It's interesting. Srila Prabhupada said, he wrote a letter in around about 1970 or so. Prabhupada said, be very careful that the mood of sense gratification does not enter in the name of Krishna consciousness. Because it's a very fine line. Right? The devotees say, well, we're Krishna's devotees, so we should have the best of everything. But then you get into a mood of sense gratification, and it's no longer for Krishna, it's for you. So the basic principle that a devotee follows is a devotee always takes prasad. We only accept something if it's being enjoyed by Krishna first. So that's our consciousness. We always think if Krishna is enjoying that. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So if you read his bhajans, he says that everything in my home belongs to the Lord. So therefore the Lord is actually the custodian of the house. And I am simply the servant and the maintainer of his servants, his family, and his property. So when you have exalted consciousness, you think like that. You think everything should be offered to the deity. Everything is for the deity's pleasure. And we're simply here as servants. So that needs to be the consciousness of a devotee. So a devotee, and especially as a grihastha, the grihastha's principle of purification is dana. Dana means charity. You don't get purified as a grihastha unless you get charity. So the reason for that is because you offer the best to Krishna. And then whatever is there, you accept that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had one disciple who was so dedicated that he gave his whole earnings every week to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And then his wife had to come to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and say, can I please have something back? Because I have to feed our children. And like that. That was his consciousness, just give everything. So a grihastha should be in the consciousness that at least we give the best to Krishna. Or we give whatever we can to Krishna. And then we accept for ourselves prasad or just what is enjoyed by Krishna. So it's the basic premise, which is. So a Kuru doesn't care if it's a nice chariot or not a nice chariot. He thinks, well, this is appropriate because I have to pick up Krishna. So Kamsa's going to make some advancement because he's offering money. The non-devotees get caught up in these things. They're always worried. And sometimes devotees get like this too. You know, they're worried about their car. You know, I've got a new car and like that. Just like some they're devotees. They come to our farm. They're not very, committed yet to the process, but they're devoted. So they brought a new car, quite an expensive car. And then they came. They walked into the temple and they gave me the keys. And they said, bless the car. And I said, so what does that mean? I bless the car. I said, I'll put the keys on the altar. So I took the keys, put it on the altar in front of the picture of the bunch of tattva, and I gave it back to her. I said, the car is blessed. Whatever that means. So I said to them, actually, you're just being ritualistic. It's, like a Hindu ritual. You'll bring something and offer, and then you go off and enjoy it. But that's not really the consciousness of a devotee. I said, you become purified by that car if you use that car in Krishna's service. It's not about just putting the key in front of a picture for 5 minutes and then you go off and now I can drive anywhere and do anything. And I won't crash because, the deities have blessed the car. That's not the consciousness of the devotee. The consciousness of the devotee is that the offering is meant to be for Krishna. So we use our car for Krishna's seva. So, any points?
Yeah,
that's later on in the Bhagavad Gita.
So why did he do that?
We'll discuss that when we get to it. Because that's a technical, point. Okay. The demigods who are under the protection of Vishnu have sent these two boys as my death. Bring them here, and also have Nanda and the other cowherd men come with gifts of tribute. So, what is the defect of Kamsa?
Self-centered,
yeah. And what's the defect in his attitude towards Krishna?
He's thinking lower. He's not thinking.
Yeah, that's it.
Unfavorable thoughts. He's not thinking of Krishna, he's favorable.
Yeah, he's not favorable. Yeah. What else? He wants to kill Krishna. And there's a defect here in his consciousness because Vedic culture, and this is the beauty of Vedic culture. I read the other day there's a statement by Prabhupada, and he says, an elephant is worth 1 lakh, whether it's alive or dead. Because when an elephant is alive, it can do so much. So it's very valuable. But when it's dead, you have the ivory from the tusks and, I don't know if they use the skin, but the ivory, the tusks and the bones, considered very valuable. So if it's dead, very valuable. If it's alive, very valuable. And Prabhupada said Vedic culture is like that. In the modern time, Vedic culture is dying, like an elephant which has passed away. So in India it's like that, but still it's there. There's some culture still there, even though it's not like it was previously. But the Vedic culture is very powerful. And the beauty of the Vedic, because my grandmother passed away last week, about 10 years ago. So on Sunday yesterday I went to my family memorial. So my uncles, aunties, you know, we only see each other when someone dies or someone gets married or, you know, if there's something important, everyone comes together, otherwise you don't see them. So we all came together, my grandmother had passed away. But it's very striking as, you know, I get older as a devotee and older as a person, then it's very striking that they still have so much ignorance in regards to the material body and death. Whereas devotees were enlightened, we see things very differently. You know, and then everyone's saying, oh, now she's going to live with grandpa. Which is not true. Yeah, well, my grandmother and grandpa are up there somewhere, like together, you know, with glasses on, sitting there drinking tea, watching television. Right? You know, they don't have a conception of reality. So the beauty of Vedic culture is we understand things from a higher perspective. Now, one of the key points of Vedic civilization and Vedic philosophy and Vedic culture is that you accept your destiny. Right? You cannot change your destiny. Unless Krishna wants to change it. But what will happen. That will take place. Right? And you do not have control of that. Unless Krishna wants to. The Prabhupada says, go before the deities, clap your hands three times, all the lines change. So if Krishna wants, he can change everything. But generally, our destiny is set out. Now, in Vedic culture, you accept your destiny. Now, Kamsa's defect is he thinks, he knows Krishna has been, it is predicted that Krishna will kill him, but then he thinks I can change that. So that's insanity. That's ignorance, avidya. That he thinks that he can stop his death. On the other hand, at the same time all this is taking place, you have the famous pastime of Dronacharya, right? In the Mahabharata. Mahabharata and 10th Canto are happening at the same time. Right? So then you have the example of Drona. So Drona was destined to be killed by Drishtadyumna. Right? Drishtadyumna came out of a fire. Domya, I believe it was the Brahmana, did the Jagya. And this chariot comes out of the fire, you know, with a golden warrior on the chariot, you know, shouting war cries, born to kill Dronacharya. Now, Dronacharya was so advanced spiritually and so learned and such a brahmana and such a practitioner of Vedic culture, they sent Drishtadyumna to study Dhanurveda, military science, under
Dronacharya.
So the boy comes, right? Everyone knows this boy is created to kill you. And what does Dronacharya do? He doesn't try to kill him like Kamsa is. That's what Kamsa did. Grabs the babies and throws them. Yeah, he's trying to kill Krishna. No, he's not trying to kill him. He says, I will teach you everything. And if I'm destined to die from you, then what can I do? So he teaches him everything. Drishtadyumna was one of the most powerful warriors on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Because he had the entire military science was taught by Drona. All the weapons, how to organize the armies, the phalanxes, all the different formations during the battle. Everything was taught to him. Right? And he thought, if I'm going to die from him, I'll die from him. So that's Vedic culture. Vedic culture means we accept our destiny. We don't spend all our time trying to change things. Happiness and distress are automatic. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Happiness and distress, heat and cold, victory and defeat, fame and infamy, they're all beyond your control. So Krishna says, titikshaswa. He just says, be tolerant. Because these things are going to come regardless. Right. And devotee is happy under all circumstances because we don't take happiness from the material world. We take it from Krishna consciousness. So therefore, whether you're happy or distressed materially, you're happy because you're a devotee. You do devotional service. So, any points?
It looks to me as though Sahasrama is very, very important.
Or Kamsa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The demigods are ascending, and he knew they are under protection of Vishnu.
Not very intelligent.
Huh?
What does the word Kams mean?
Kams.
What does it mean? Huh? It means dull. It means like bell metal. Very dense, very dull. Kams. So he's a very dense, dull person. So. What can I do? Any other points? After you bring Krishna and Balaram, I will have them killed by my elephant, who is as powerful as death itself. And if by chance they escape from him, I will have them killed by my wrestlers, who are as strong as lightning. So it won't be long till we discuss this pastime. Krishna goes to Mathura. With Krishna. Yeah, when Krishna goes. So it's not long, it's only a few chapters away now. So in one sense, we don't want to finish the Vrindavan pastimes. Because nothing compares to the Vrindavan pastimes. But on the other hand, there's some very powerful pastimes which are also coming up. So when Krishna enters into Mathura, it's an amazing pastime. And when he fights with Kuvalaya Pete, the elephant, it's an amazing pastime. I'm looking forward to narrating that pastime. But on another hand, we don't want Krishna to leave Vrindavan. In another way, Krishna does not leave Vrindavan. It's just like an expansion which leaves. The original Krishna stays, Swayambhu. So, all of these great personalities, they're insignificant compared to Krishna. Right? Kuvalaya appeared, Janura, Mushtika, Kamsa himself. Right? He just killed Arishta. And tomorrow night we'll hear about the killing of Keshi. Right? He's saving the most powerful demons to the end. Arista and Keshi were two of the most powerful. In the battle of Lanka, Prabhupada says in history there were two great battles. What were the two great battles? Lanka and Kurukshetra.
The two great battles. So in Lanka, Ravana, he didn't send out the most powerful warriors first.
He sent out different warriors, right? And that one got killed, that one got killed. So then he would send out more powerful. So then he said, okay, now Indrajit. Indrajit went out, didn't come back. So he said, go and wake up Kumbhakarna. So then they woke him up, sent him out, he didn't come back. So Ravana said, now I have to go. So then Ravana went out, then Ram defeated him. And he said, go back, I'll give you one chance. Go back, bring Sita in the morning, and this is finished. No? But if you don't bring Sita, then that's it. You will die. No? So same thing. No? Kamsa, he's doing everything he can, and he's sending more and more powerful now. And the most powerful demons. He just sent Arishta, Arishta's dead. Tomorrow night he sends Keshi. Keshi, gone. No? And now he thinks, well, I'll put Kuvalaya Pete there. Right, but if he gets past him, then Chanura and Mushtik, and if he gets past them, I'll deal with him myself. But this is foolish, because you're dealing with God. So there's like when Brahma and the Brahma Vimoham Lila, Brahma is the most powerful person in this universe. Right? He's the most powerful God. But it says that Brahma felt that when he was in front of Krishna, and Krishna expanded himself, he said he felt like a firefly in front of the sun. So you know the little fireflies? You know, night time they make the... You see them? In India you see? Different places. Around Mumbai they have them. Little fireflies. So at night time they make some light. But when they come in front of the sun, you can't even see them. They're there, but you can't see. The sun is too powerful. So that is what all of us are like. Sometimes we become very proud. I can do this, I can do that.
But when you come in front of Krishna, what can you do?
Right? If Krishna stops you, you can't even lift your hand anymore. If Krishna says you can't, that's it, you can't. It doesn't work. So there's nothing you can do. So all these personalities, they're very foolish. Yeah, what should they have done when they were to bring down? Now, what should Arista do, Keshi do, Vyomasura, Agasura, Pralamba, Baka, what should they have done? Yeah, they should have surrendered. Should have got there and just bowed down and said, do you have any service? Can I roger ponies? Kamsa actually went to Vrindavan one time. You know the pastime when Kamsa went? It's not in the Bhagavad Gita. Kamsa went. Kamsa himself wanted to go and see Krishna. So he went to Vrindavan, walking into Vrindavan. Kamsa's big. He's not described in the Bhagavad Gita how powerful he is, but he's very, very powerful. So he was walking into Vrindavan, and then Purnamasi met him. Now, do you know Purnamasi? Who is she? Yogamaya personified. She's the older gopi in Vrindavan. What does she look like?
White.
Yeah, white hair, like old lady, like white hair, white sari. Right? Everyone in Vrindavan listens to her. She's the guru. Who is she the mother of?
Sandapini.
Grandmother of Mother Mangala. But the mother of?
Sandipani
Muni, Krishna's guru. And his son is Madhu Mangala, Krishna's best friend. So, Purnamasi. So he comes as walking. Purnamasi says, "O king, why have you come to Vrindavan?" Comes and said, "I've come to see son of Nanda." He says, "You can't walk into Vrindavan like this. Vrindavan is a cowherd village. You're a big kshatriya and you're dressed like a big warrior. It's not appropriate." He said, "You take bath in this kund, and I will change your form. I'll give you a form that you can enter in Vrindavan and no one will notice you." Comes and said, "Okay." So he walks into the kund, comes out, and he's like a gopi. Come see. Gopi. So just like gopi. And then she said, "Now you have the form, you can go into Vrindavan, no one will notice you. You can spy on Krishna, you can see him for yourself." So he starts walking into Vrindavan. And the other cowherd girls, you know, like in the village in India. So if one lady comes into the village, all the other ladies say, "Hey, who are you? Never saw you before. Hey, which place are you from? Come here." So they took. And I said, "What are you good at doing? Well, you're gopi. Where'd you come from? Which village? What are you good at doing?" Said, comes to saying, "Well, I don't know so many things like that. So, okay, we'll give you some seva. You can make the cow dung, the patties." So they got Kamsa, right? Make the cow dung patties. So Kamsa again, he goes, "Man, he's never done before in his life." He's like, "Feel like this." I said, hey, stupid, what are you doing? The gopis are beating him. "You don't even know how to make cow dung patty? What's wrong with you?" So all the gopis come, they're like pulling him and pushing, "Hey, what's wrong with you? Hey, stupid girl," like this. Everyone's beating him. Like that. So they beat him so much, he ran back out of Vrindavan. Right? As he ran, he got to Purnamasi and he said, "Change me." The Purnamasi said, "Okay, go into the kund." He came out as Kamsa and she said, "No, you go. And don't you come back to this place. Because this place is, what it means is when you go into Vrindavan, because all the demons, they represent different anatta. But what does Kamsa represent? Kamsa represents false ego. You put all of it together, that's Kamsa. He's all the bad qualities. Each demon represents different bad qualities. All of that is Kamsa together. So what does it mean? It means that if you have false ego, you can't enter Vrindavan. Right? You start going in, but as soon as you get in, then the gopis come and they slap you. "Hey, who are you?" And that's what it's like. I know myself because I like to go to Vrindavan. That's my favorite thing to do in my life. I like to go to Vrindavan. But I know when I go to Vrindavan, I try to go as deep as I can, but every time I go, as soon as I start going a bit deeper, then, you know, the gopis come and they start slapping me. Hey! Because false ego is still there. And as long as false ego is there, you will get slaps. Like the demons will get killed in Vrindavan. That's the consciousness. So you have to enter Vrindavan without false ego, just in the mood of servant. If you go in there with any mood other than servant, then it will be detected. And Krishna will send his servants to assist you. Any points?
How did he say all this to a guru?
What is that?
I mean, he knew a guru loves them.
Yeah.
So how did he dare to say all this? That you bring the two boys, then I'll kill them, then I'll kill his father, then I'll kill my father.
Akrura is hiding his affection for Krishna. So he's pretending like he's Kamsa's like friend or well-wisher. But in his heart, he just wants Krishna to kill Kamsa. So sometimes devotees, they'll act a little bit like that. A little bit secret. So that they can get something done for Krishna. Like Shakuni. Shakuni was like that too. You know the gambling match? Mahabharata? Shakuni rolling the dice? Shakuni was playing on behalf of Duryodhana, right? But Shakuni wanted Duryodhana dead. He hated Duryodhana. Because Duryodhana had imprisoned all his family, killed all his family. Right? So Shakuni had the dice, which are actually made from the knuckles of these family members. Right, and because of their potency they left in there, he could control the dice and he could roll any number. So he defeated Yudhishthira because he knew that if Yudhishthira was forced, he would fight and he would kill Duryodhana. So that's why he defeated him, because he just wanted the Pandavas to get angry so that they would come back and they would kill. So Shakuni's actually a devotee. But in the match, he's acting like, oh, you know, Yudhishthira defeated you. So sometimes devotee has to act like that in order to.
But Duryodhana couldn't have killed his ancestors because maybe some other people in that dynasty.
TK? Acha. When I'm in Melbourne, usually I stay at Krishna Kitar's house. You know, Krishna Kitar Prabhu. You know his daughter, Gopi. Mm-hmm. You know his daughter? Mm-hmm. Like, how old is she? Six or something?
Five.
So I go upstairs to get something to drink. She's there, she's playing. And I walk in and I say, TK Acha. And she goes, that's not proper Hindi. She goes, that's not proper Hindi. I don't know. I'm practicing. Okay. When these two have been killed, I will kill Vasudev and all their lamenting relatives, the Vrishnis, Bhojas, and Dasharas. So this is, once again, this is called avidya. Why did we come into the material world? Avijja. Yeah. If you go to the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami says the reason all of us are in the material world is because avijja. Mm-hmm. Avijja means ignorance or no knowledge. Vidya means knowledge, understanding. Avijja means without knowledge, without understanding. Krishna is God. That is vidya. That is knowledge. That is the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Ete cham sakala pumsa Krishna's tu Bhagavan swaya. That is knowledge. When we deny Krishna is God, that is avidya. And why are we in the material world? Because we deny Krishna is God. And now, right, theoretically, we understand Krishna is God, But we don't always act in that way. We still take ourselves to be the Purush or the enjoyer, which is false. So that is called avijja, and that's what keeps us in this material world. And that's why we can't see Krishna right now. It was like Sankarshan Prabhu was giving class this morning, and he said, develop prema bhakti now. Right? And that was Srila Prabhupada's mood. Right? There has to be a sense of urgency. And sometimes the devotees say, oh, I can't do it, and it will take so long. And no, do it now. What is our excuse? We don't have an excuse. Our only excuse is we're not sincere. That's not what it is. We don't want to serve Krishna. That's the point. Or Bhakti Tirtha Swami. He gives some nice seminars. So Bhakti Tirtha Swami is one of my main Shiksha gurus. So his instructions, they're like some of my guiding principles in my life. So Maharaj, he explains in one of his seminars, he says, sometimes devotees go away from Krishna. Or devotees make excuses why they can't surrender to Krishna. But Maharaj explains that the real point is you only want to surrender to Krishna to a certain point. That's the point. Like you only want 70% surrender or 60% or 80%. You don't want to give 100% to Krishna. Purujan Prabhu was saying this too. I was speaking to him last week. He was saying the same thing. We only want to give to Krishna to this much. We don't want to go the final like that. We say we do, but actually we don't. So we always come up with excuses. And then when we leave Krishna consciousness, or we don't want to, we make some excuse, oh, I couldn't serve Krishna because of this, or this devotee did this to me, or something happened, so therefore I couldn't serve Krishna. The point is you don't want to serve Krishna fully. So then you latch onto any excuse. And you see when devotees are struggling, and they want to go away. They start saying, oh, this happened. You know, and the temple devotees did this and this thing happened and I can't serve because of what they did. But nothing stops you serving Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita says nothing material can stop your devotional service. Nothing. Nothing can stop you chanting Hare Krishna. Nothing can stop you serving Krishna. Even if you don't want to serve in the temple, even Srila Prabhupada, he's a great disciple, Jamuna Devi. So she's very famous. Right? Every morning she sings the Govinda prayers. So for the next 10,000 years, all over ISKCON, whenever we greet the deities, Jamuna's voice will be there. So it's such an such a dear devotee of Prabhupada. But then she joined in 66, and up until about 1972, or 74, I think it was about 72, she was serving Prabhupada full time. But then she left like the Association of Devotees. She went to live outside of ISKCON. Right? And then she wrote to Prabhupada. And she said that, you know, Prabhupada, I'm living outside and I'm doing my service in my home. I'm worshiping my deities in my home and I'm chanting in my home and reading, I'm doing all that. And then Tamal Krishnamurti read the letter to Prabhupada. And he thought Prabhupada was going to say, you have to come back. But Prabhupada wrote back to her and he said, that is okay. As long as you do everything, chanting, reading, offering prasad, worshipping the deity, as long as you do everything, you are in this ISKCON. That's your choice. If you want to be inside the temple or outside, that's your choice. But you must do your devotional service, and nothing can stop that. So when we don't want to surrender to Krishna, we make some excuse. And the point is, we just don't want to surrender to Krishna. That's the point. I know myself, but you know, I get to a point, and then there's points I won't go past. I won't give everything to Krishna. I'm trying to, but still, I'm not fully surrendered yet. There's certain things I won't give everything to Krishna. So unless you give everything, you can't get back to Vrindavan. So it comes to us like this. You won't surrender to Krishna. And all of us are like this to some degree. We're not like Kamsa because he's very... But we're not pure devotees either. And the only thing stopping us being a pure devotee is?
Ourselves.
There's no one stopping us. No one's stopping us from being a pure devotee. Only one person, that's us. Because we don't want to be. So, any points? Okay.
It is cruel. It's cruel. Foolish as well as cruel.
Kamsa?
Well, it's a killer.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they like this, the demons.
Well, it's roughly as it's already who is struggling.
Even that guy over in North Korea, they don't know his name?
Kim Jong.
Kim Jong? Yeah. What does Kim Jong mean? Crazy boy or something? Killed his uncle. Did he kill his dad? Or his dad died? He killed the uncle. He might have killed a cousin or something as well. I mean, it's happening right now in this day and age. You know, there's demonic leaders doing the same thing comes to do. Just also, because you know, he came into power and the uncle said something he didn't like. He did something, he said, oh, you shouldn't do that. He said, kill the guy. Yeah, in Nepal as well. The whole family got.
They have got culture, Indian culture there too.
Yeah. Yeah, demons are always there.
What do you think of Donald Trump? Donald Trump.
What do I think of him? He's 50-50. Yeah, half the things he says are quite sensible, and the other half he says are quite crazy. But he's a little bit of a, how would you say him? He's a bit of a megalomaniac. He's someone who's very self-absorbed and very successful. He has a lot of power from the money and also power from the material energy, but then that intoxicates you. Because some of the things he says are actually quite good, but then some of the things he says are crazy. We need devotees to be leaders. That's the answer. Until devotees are leaders, then. Okay. I will also kill my old father, Ugrasen, who is greedy for my kingdom, and I will kill his brother, Devaka, and all my other enemies as well. So in the Vedas it says, Atmavan, Manyate, Jagat. So it means, as you see, you think everyone else sees as well. So if you're a demon, you think everyone else is a demon as well. That's your consciousness. Because you think, you know, I would kill them. I don't trust them. So you think they must be like that also. But the problem is within us. And even as devotees, it's like that. You know, sometimes we'll see another devotee and we'll think, oh, they're thinking like that, or they're thinking like that. They're not thinking like that at all. It's only because we project that, because that's the way we think. You know, we don't trust someone, right? Because we lack trust in ourselves. Yeah. And in Kali Yuga, the most difficult thing for people to do is trust. Right? It is called Shraddha. When Vyasadeva, if you read the first canto, seventh chapter, when Vyasadeva had darshan of Kali Yuga, and he saw Kali Yuga was coming, the one thing that's interesting, the Bhagavatam says, what he saw was ashraddha. One of the principal qualities of Kali Yuga is that people lose faith. We don't trust leaders anymore. Right? If you go back in the Mahabharata, they love the leaders. Like Pandu. Right? You read in the Mahabharata, when Pandu went out and conquered Arjuna's father, and he came back, the whole city went out to meet him. Whereas these days, we don't, you know, our politicians are coming and we say, we're not interested. Even a few years ago, the Queen of England, she said she was coming to Australia, right? And some people said, don't come. What did Prabhupada call Prince Charles and the Queen's husband? What's the Queen's husband's name?
Philip.
And her son is named Charles. What did Prabhupada call them? Prabhupada said they're hippies. He said they don't do anything. Just hippies. Just rich hippies. They don't actually do anything. Well, they do things. But the basic point is that people have lost faith. We don't have trust. And spiritual life is based upon faith. If you don't have faith, you can't advance. Right? And it's difficult in Kali Yuga because our faith is broken on so many levels. And then if it gets broken in ISKCON, which sometimes it does, sometimes we have negative experiences, then we lose faith. And it's a very difficult thing. It's very difficult in Kali Yuga. So at all costs, you have to keep your faith. Always act in a way that devotees will trust you and respect you and love you. And if you act properly, then devotees will have that faith in you. And if that faith is there, spiritual life, it grows.
That's what we saw in meditation.
Yeah, Vyasadeva, at the beginning of Kali Yuga. And what holds this come together? Prabhu Das, our treasurer, he was saying to me the other day. I said, "Oh, you're doing a good job." And he said, "It's actually Prabhupada who's holding the whole thing together." Yeah. He said, "The rest of us are like monkeys. Yeah, we just run around throwing a few pebbles here and there. And, yeah, we do a little bit, but it's actually Prabhupada who holds the whole thing together." And the powerful thing about ISKCON, and that's why ISKCON is powerful, is because Prabhupada, everyone has faith in him. Because he was infallible. He was like Krishna. He had the same quality, infallible. Right? And the more devotees become like Prabhupada and ISKCON, our gurus, our temple presidents, our managers, our bhakti bhiksha leaders, our pot washers, everyone. If everyone becomes like Prabhupada, which means develop good qualities, everyone has faith and trust, ISKCON will just expand. Everyone.
So no faith in Krishna, not enough, everyone. No, he saw no faith in Krishna.
He saw that people don't have faith. People, yeah. Everything. We don't. People don't trust people anymore. Even I noticed, even in the last 10 years or so, like people don't trust as much as they used to. You know, it's just like so many bad things are happening in the world now. People are really losing trust.
Yeah, when we came in Australia, people used to leave the key, you know, outside the door. And then they said, "Doctor, you come and you open the door and come in." They don't do anything.
Yeah, Kali Yuga is trying. In Canada, in America, everyone locks the doors and everything like that. But in Canada, I don't know now, but a few years ago, people don't lock their doors. There's just this much more faith in the society trust. People, they just go out and they don't lock the door. But in America, everyone locks them because everyone's lost faith and they're scared. Okay. "Then, my friend, this earth will be free of thorns." So who is the thorn? Yeah, it comes off. But he thinks everyone else is the thorn. But actually it's him.
He thinks Krishna is the thorn.
Yeah, he thinks Krishna is the thorn. It comes through as the problem. When the king is bad, right, it really causes problems in the whole country. It's like in North Korea, you got that crazy boy. So then all the way down. And in Australia, you've got that crazy boy. That's all the way down. And then in America, you got that crazy boy. All the way down. Hog up the country. Because the guys at the top, if they've got a problem, then it just filters all the way down. "My elder relative, Jarasandha, and my dear friend, Dvivida, are solid well wishes of mine, as are Shambhara, Naraka, and Bana. I will use them all to kill off those kings who are allied with the demigods, and then I will rule the earth." So that's the nature of an asura. No? Asuras are always full of exploitation. In other words, you see other people according to what you can get out of them. How does that make you feel when someone just wants to get something from you? Yeah, you feel exploited. Right? Do you know people like that in your life? We all had that experience, right? Some people, whenever they come to us, they just want something, right? And how does it make you feel? Mm-hmm. Not very good. Right? So it's like that, right? Kamsa, he's just saying, "Oh, you know, he will do that for me, he will do that, he will do that." And he's got them all controlled by fear. That's the nature of material consciousness. And when you have that kind of relationship, it's exploitive. You can't develop love and trust. You can't develop intimacy. Right? And that's the way sometimes we approach Krishna. And that's why we are in the material world. Because when we go to Krishna sometimes, right, we're only going to him because we want something. Right? Oh, you know, I've got this problem. Why don't you fix it? But Krishna, if you treat him like that, then you don't get him. Because I think I told the story recently, that old lady was in Vrindavan, she's carrying sticks on her head. She walked along, all the sticks fell off. She said, oh, Krishna, please help me. So then Krishna, he appeared. Right? And Krishna said, what do you want? She said, please put the sticks back on my head. So Krishna said, okay, put the sticks back on her head. And then he disappeared. So if we just want Krishna for material things, he may give you the material things, but he'll never give you himself. So as long as we have motivations in our service and motivations in our relationships, not just with Krishna, I mean, it's primarily with Krishna, but it's not just with Krishna, it's also the way we treat Krishna's devotees. If we're always exploiting his devotees, not treating his devotees properly, you can't have a proper relationship with Krishna. And it's not even his devotees, it's also the non-devotees. Right? You have to get out of this mentality of like treating them improperly too. That's why it says in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Pandit Samadarshana. You have to see all living entities equally. That's actually Krishna consciousness. Any points?
But that lady who called Lord Krishna, she must be very pure. Otherwise Lord Krishna has got the right to say no.
So he's advanced to one level, but
she must be very advanced.
Not perfect though.
Yeah.
Now that you understand my instructions, please go at once and bring Krishna and Balaram to watch the bow sacrifice and see the opulence of the Yadus' capital. So what comes to thinking? What's he thinking? Yeah. And what's he thinking? How does he think Krishna will react? Yeah. In other words, he thinks he can buy Krishna. Right, which is foolish. Who else tried to do this? Duryodhana, Mahabharata. Same thing happened. Krishna came to stop the war, actually. And on the way, he was traveling to Hastinapur, right, to stop the war. All along the road, along the way, Duryodhana was leaving gifts. Incredible opulence. And Krishna is thinking, I mean, Krishna knows everything, so, but Krishna's thinking, he's just trying to buy me, this guy. Right? It's all just, how do you say it? What's the word?
Right.
Yeah, he's just trying to bribe me. Right? He's just bribing. So then he arrives, he walks in, and there's gifts, unlimited opulence, so many gifts for Krishna. Have this. And he cooked, not he cooked, but he arranged for a feast for Krishna, you know, to offer. When someone comes to your home, you offer a nice prasad. So tables and tables and tables and tables. All the most opulent dishes. Cooked by the best cooks. Right? And Krishna looked at Duryodhana, and he said, Duryodhana, I have no appetite. Duryodhana's looking at me. Now I arranged all this for you. He said, Duryodhana, you simply want to bribe me. But he said, you know what? He said, do you know what your defect is? You are envious of the Pandavas. And the Pandavas are my life and soul. And you envy them. So I cannot taste. I have no attraction to anything. Duryodhana said, capture him. Right, so all the soldiers ran to get Krishna. Right, very intelligent. Go and capture God. So Krishna went. Right, and then from him came Balaram, the Pandavas, devatas, and all the soldiers went back. Right. There's like all these personalities, and Krishna just walked out. So then he went to Vidura's house, walked in, right? And Vidura was, oh my God. Krishna just walked in, said to his wife, it's like in Indian house, you walk in, you have to feed you something. Said, get something for him to eat, feed him, like that. Said, I don't have anything.
Bananas.
Is there only banana? So then he said, quick, get the banana, peel it. So happy Krishna's there, he said, hey, quickly. So Krishna took the banana peel. Okay. Started eating banana peel. So Krishna will eat the banana peel of the devotee if it is offered with
love.
But you can offer him the most opulent prasad, the most opulent offering, but he won't touch any of it. So this is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. That's why Krishna himself says, Patram, Pushpam, Phalam, Toyam. When he says that, he's not even speaking in plurality, which means he says a leaf. You don't even have to offer him multiple things, just one leaf. But if it's with bhakti, Krishna says, Ashnami. I relish that, I accept that.
One flower.
One flower. Yeah. Just one flower you can offer to Krishna. But with love, you capture Krishna. And we'll see later in the 10th canto, probably in about 2 years' time, the pastime of Sudama. Right? What did he offer Krishna?
Chip rice.
I mean, it's just like a piece of flat rice. One piece like that. And he captured Krishna. Right? And then he went to offer another piece. And Rukmini was about to... Krishna was about to take. Rukmini grabbed his hand. He said, no. He said, he's already got everything. Right? Don't take the second piece, because then... Yeah, there's nothing else to give.
So that is what bhakti is about.
Okay. Sri Akrura said, O King, you have expertly devised a process to free yourself of misfortune. Still, one should be equal in success and failure, since it is certainly destiny that produces the results of one's work. So this is exactly the opposite of what Kamsa is thinking. Kamsa is thinking, I can kill Krishna. And Akrura is saying, I'll bring them. That's okay. But if you're going to die, you're going to die. So you've got to change your mentality towards that. That's the point. You don't have to die. But you have to become Krishna's devotee. When he comes into Mathura, you have to get off the throne and put him on the throne. And that's what he didn't do. You don't put Krishna on the throne, then Krishna will knock you off the throne. The choice is ours.
Actually, this is the same lines that Kamsa told Vasudeva Devaki after killing the eight sons. That one has to accept his destiny because it comes of one's own.
So that's the difference between jnana and vijnana. It's alright to say things, but you have to realize it. Right? Your preaching only becomes potent when people see you doing it. You can say, oh, do this, surrender to Krishna. But then if no one sees you surrendering to Krishna, no one listens. Right? If you say surrender to Krishna, and then everyone says, oh, you are doing it, then that's what it means to be a guru. Because all of us are gurus to some degree. But the people in our society we call gurus, why are they gurus? Because when they give class, they say surrender to Krishna. Right? And when they get off the Vyasasan, they're surrendering to Krishna. You see it. Thoughts, words, deeds in Krishna's service. Therefore, that is guru. That is acharya. One who teaches by?
Example.
Yeah. That's why Sanatana Goswami said to Haridas Thakur, right? He said, you are the perfect devotee because everything you say is perfect, but everything you do is the same. So acha and pracha must be the same. You can say so many things, but if you're not doing it, then... An ordinary person is determined to act on his desires even when fate prevents their fulfillment. Therefore, he encounters both happiness and distress, yet even though such is the case, I will execute your order. Shukadev Goswami said, having thus instructed Akrura, King Kamsa dismissed his ministers and retired to his quarters, and Akrura returned home. So, why did Akrura go to Vrindavan? Right? Not because he was obeying Kamsa, because he was submissive to Krishna. Because he knew this was Krishna's desire. And we'll see in the next chapter as well. Narada speaks in such a way. Because that's a devotee, he understands Krishna's desire. Just like a disciple, all of us have gurus. So there are first class disciples, Prabhupada teaches. First class disciples, second class disciples, and third class disciples. You see in ISKCON, some devotees are first class, some are second class, some are third class. A first class disciple knows what his guru wants. Even before the guru asks. That's first class. Second class is you make mistakes. Third class is you make mistakes and you keep making the same mistake. So we have to be the way Akrura is. He knows what Krishna wants. So Kamsa says, go and get him, bring him back, we'll kill him. And he thinks, no problem. I'll go and get him, we'll bring him back, and he'll kill you. Because he knows what Krishna's desire is. Srila Prabhupada, key. Okay. So I'll give you the key memory verses for the next section. You can write them down. Canto 10, chapter 33. Actually, I'll start again. Canto 10, chapter 32, verse 22. 10, 32. 22. Then, Canto 10, chapter 33, verse 29. And I have the open book topics for the next section, so you just come and get them and enjoy yourselves. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.